Dateline Washington, Wednesday, January 14th, 2009. Hello again from the nation's capital. I'm Greg Corumbus. In this edition, Texas Congressman Mike Conaway. The lawmaker joins me to explain why he's opposed to releasing the second half of the financial bailout money, even though he voted for the plan back in 2008. Also in this edition, Oklahoma Congresswoman Mary Fallon. Her Republican Study Committee has come forward with an alternative to the Obama economic stimulus plan. We'll ask her what the major principles are and how it would be fleshed out with details, especially in terms of tax breaks for the American people. Plus, in this edition of Dateline Washington, what to do about the detention facility at Guantanamo Bay and what to make of the latest developments in the Middle East conflict between Israel and Hamas. We'll talk about both subjects with former Assistant Secretary of Defense Frank Gaffney. And we'll talk with Roll Call's Jessica Brady as Barack Obama's pick to lead the Treasury Department comes under scrutiny. All that plus Wednesday's headlines still ahead on Dateline Washington, but we begin with Congressman Mike Conaway, and we begin right now. My first guest in this edition is Texas Congressman Mike Conaway, a Republican from the Lone Star State's 11th Congressional District. We've asked him to join us today to offer his thoughts as the Bush administration, on behalf of the incoming Obama administration, asked Congress to authorize the release of the second $350 billion contained in the Wall Street bailout, also known as the Troubled Asset Recovery Program. The acronym there is TARP. And Congressman, thanks so much for being with us.
Good to be with you. Thanks.
You have issued a release letting your constituents and the rest of the public know that you will not be in favor of releasing this money. Why?
Well, I voted for the original plan, which included this second bite of the apple, in effect, that allowed us to look and see how effective the first half of the money had been and whether or not we actually needed the second half. The issues that we were dealing with in late September, early October, I think have been dealt with in terms of the confidence that the lending side of the lending business industry had, a combination of two things. One, the money that was invested through preferred stock with this TARP money, but more importantly, I think, is the work that the FDIC has done in guaranteeing transaction accounts and bank-to-bank lending. I think that assumption of what potentially could be trillions of dollars of liability by the FDIC has reestablished the confidence in the lending side, bank-to-bank lending, et cetera, that I was worried about collapsing back in October. In addition, the Fed, subsequent to that, began buying commercial paper directly from companies. And so the issues that I felt were the extreme grave risks that the system faced in late September and October have been addressed. And in my view, the other half of this money is unnecessary.
You gave several reasons there, Congressman. How easy is it to tell on those various issues that you just mentioned how effective that money has been over just a short period of time?
Well, the issue is, can credit-worthy companies who actually want to borrow money, can they find a bank that will loan them that money? And I would argue that that is happening. Certainly in a contracting economy as we're in right now, loan demand does go down. And so because folks are looking at the prospects of being able to borrow money, can their business generate the profits necessary to be able to pay off that debt, given the economic circumstances that they're facing and what they see going forward? So you're always going to get a contraction in lending, so it's hard to quantify on an empirical basis what that's happened. But we're no longer hearing the stories about bank-to-bank lending freezing up and all the other things that were going on in September and October, which this lending piece is not the commercial retail lending that goes on. This was bank-to-bank lending, on the commercial paper side, which is an arena that's relatively below the radar screen most times because it functions seamlessly, efficiently, and effectively. And it was that system that I was concerned was going to freeze up, and I think Paulson was concerned was freezing up in late September and October. And you no longer hear those anecdotal stories because the risks of loaning, if you're a bank officer and you're loaning money to another bank, the risks of that bank going bankrupt and not sending you your money back have been eliminated by the fact that the FDIC now guarantees that Fed funds borrowing between those two banks, as well as taking care of transaction accounts. So I just don't think that we face the kinds of risks now that we did in October. Clearly, the economy is worse now than it is in October, but it was not intended to be a stimulus package. It was not intended to be a get us out of the bad economy package. It was a package that was intended to preserve the lending system. That's obviously one of the foundations for being able to create a growth growing economy, and I think we've done that, and we should not spend this other $350 billion.
Congressman, there's been a lot of criticism aimed especially towards Treasury Secretary Paulson about changing the strategy for using the first half of the TARP money. Sounds like from the concerns you had and your belief that they've been eased to somewhat, especially in the lending and banking sector, that perhaps you think he's getting at least a bit of a bum rap. What's your assessment of how he's handled that first $350 billion overall?
Well, most of it went to invest in preferred stock in banks, which I view is a better way to spend the money than buying trouble assets. Had he gone through and bought the troubled assets themselves, first off was what price do you buy those assets at? And then do you create a bureaucracy, a huge bureaucracy, to oversee the liquidation of those assets? Buy low, sell high is not something the federal government's got a core competency in. And so they would have had a bureaucracy. Under that bureaucracy would have been a layer of professional money managers, and we just have been a very complicated system. By investing in stock in the banks, it A, put capital in the banks, which buying the assets would not have done, and those stock certificates don't require a bureaucracy to oversee them. At some point in time, the terms of those of the stock will encourage banks to buy that stock back from the federal government, as well as the 15% common stock that we got as kind of for wanting to buy the original preferred stock. So his change from troubled assets to stock, my view, improved the program markedly. Now, the last money that was loaned to or given to the auto manufacturers, I don't think that was should have been done under the TARP program. We had already voted. Timber or I had voted against a $25 billion loan to these auto manufacturers, and I think the TARP money should not have been used in that regard because, quite frankly, these automobile dealers, manufacturers have to shed their labor contracts, and you only can do that effectively through a bankruptcy proceedings that I think Chrysler and GM have to go through.
Congressman, do you have any ideas? This may call for a little bit of speculation. What the priorities for the incoming administration would be with that $350 billion?
Well, first priority would leave it with the taxpayers or not borrow it. At a minimum, he should not. It would, in effect, reduce whatever stimulus package or the impact of whatever stimulus package he's going to have put forward. It would reduce that impact on the federal treasury. This is $350 billion that will be borrowed if we spend it. The stimulus package, that federal spending, will be borrowed as well. And so by turning this $350 back and not borrowing it and spending it allows us to reduce the exposure of the American taxpayer to whatever spending program that the president comes up with.
Congressman, as you look back over the past few months now, and especially to the vote to authorize the $700 billion package, if in fact this second half is approved, do you believe that the bigger lesson here is that a precedent has been set for this sort of government involvement when the economy hits a crisis mode, or do you think the bigger lesson is that the public, for the most part, didn't like the fact that the government took that big of a bite?
Oh, Greg, I'm not sure how to answer that. Clearly, all of us who voted for that should have understood that this was a slippery slope, that this was a step away from a government that we would like, and we understood that. The reason I was willing to take it was that it had a fixed term to it, not created entitlement, because even in buying those troubled assets, those had limited lives, albeit 20 years perhaps. But we eventually would have gotten ourselves extricated from those original investments. Now, by buying stock, we'll get out of these things quicker. And so it was a limited life. It was not a long-term, not a forever entitlement that anybody who decides to loan too much money can simply run to the federal government and be made whole. So I recognize it was a slippery slope. And, I hope we learn from all of this process that federal intervention, which in no small part, we won't have time to talk about that, but the CRA and Freddie and Fannie and the lending excesses that went on in no small part promoted by bad government policies, that we continue to look for ways to avoid those kind of issues in the future.
Do you get the sense, Congressman, that this current and new Congress, the 111th Congress, is looking to reform the policies that led to some of these bad economic conditions, or do you suspect that there's more big government on the way?
Well, Greg, I'm worried there's more big government on the way. We You know, much of this policy was done under a Democratic legislature, the Democratic president. The CRA Act in particular was put in effect in 1977 with Carter signing it and Democrats fully in charge. You know, I worry about Obama's statement the other day that only the federal government can intervene and break the cycle that we're in. The truth of the matter is economies expand and we love it, and then economies contract and we hate it. The federal government has... can really only exacerbate going both directions, and it really doesn't turn the tide. Until Americans across the United States feel confident that their jobs are safe and that the money that they're making is going to be replaced, and they begin to spend that money, that's going to be what turns the tide, and businesses begin to grow and reinvest and feel that confidence that we have a stable tax policy, we have a stable government in place, and that they're willing to take risks, then you begin to get a growing economy. But it is hard to do. It takes millions of decisions by millions of people across the United States to turn an economy around. And quite frankly, given how broad the global markets are these days, those decisions have got to be made around the world, in effect, by folks becoming confident that they can, in fact, invest and buy things. So, you know, I would view this current crisis as grave, no doubt about it, but it is temporary. None of us expect that this is a forever shrinking economy. Although it seems like it is right now, there will be a time, and I can't put a date, time frame on that. Even the Great Depression had an end, and we had an expanding economy after 9 years of the Great Depression. So this is a temporary fix, a temporary circumstance that we're in. Let's be careful about adding permanent debt to the grandchildren and great-grandchildren that we love or will love to fix a temporary problem that you and I ought to deal with our resources rather than theirs.
Real quickly, you were home obviously over Christmas and into the new year. What did you hear most from your constituents about the economy?
Well, I've got a bit of a I represent West Texas, and we have benefited greatly from the high oil prices, high gas prices that the rest of the world has hated over the last 6 or 7 years. And so the economy in West Texas, Central Texas, is still good. Unemployment rate still under 4%. And so, you know, this recession and slowdown and shrinking economy is slowly coming to West Texas. And so, you know, the folks I talk with have a little different perspective than the people who in communities where unemployment rates are high. Businesses are closing and those kinds of things.
Congressman, unfortunately, we have to call time there. Thank you so much for your time.
Greg, thanks, bud. Appreciate being with you.
Absolutely. Texas Congressman Mike Conaway represents Texas's 11th Congressional District. This is Dateline Washington.